The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Elon Musk has no social conscience or conscience whatsoever. I don't know, whatever Elon Musk is on, it says that that's okay to continue to air that is absolutely disgusting behaviour. And quite frankly, the bloke should be jailed. And the sooner that we can bring rules in or do something about this sort of game playing with our social media, the better off we're going to be. But quite frankly, the power that that man has because of that platform that he's on, it's got to stop. It has absolutely got to stop.
Hello and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Show. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry, coming to you live here from our studio in Edstone, England. I'm very grateful for another opportunity to guest host. We've just come from recording Trumpet Hour that will air later today. And as I look at myself in the TV camera there, I see that I've got a bit of headphone hair from wearing the headphones for recording that. Lots to get to as usual. I want to keep you updated on some of the latest from the US Supreme Court. We've got a couple of important stories from Europe yesterday. There's a fascinating segment later on the show on artificial intelligence. Stick around for that. I think that that's a little bit mind-blowing, some of the material we've got on that for you. But first, I wanted to take a quick look at Australia. Last time I was on the show, we talked about free speech being under attack all around the world. And so I thought I'd give you a bit of an update on some of the crazy news coming from Australia. I feel like, you know, during COVID, all the time we were reading the news coming out of Australia and saying, what is going on? Like, the image, at least in Britain, that we have in Australia is rugged individualism. Yet you have all of this collectivism going on there. So you saw the kind of the rant at the top of the hour where all of these Australian politicians, that lady in particular, what's her name? Jackie Smith, I think it is, something like that. It's in my notes further down. Jackie Lambie. She is absolutely outraged because Elon Musk won't do what he is told. So you may remember there was a terrorist attack in Australia. There was a Christian preacher up in a church, and a Muslim came along and shouted Allahu Akbar and stabbed him. And that was videoed. His service was being videoed, so the stabbing was on video. And just like a lot of other countries, Australia's top concern after a Muslim terrorist attack is Islamophobia. We wouldn't want anyone to view Islam negatively after something like this. And so they wanted the video of that stabbing taken down in case it promotes Islamophobia. So they put out the request saying, okay, you know, we want you to take down this image, take down this video. And Twitter, or X as they now want to be called, but I mean, you will still go to twitter.com. Who actually called it X anyway? Twitter said, no, we're not doing... Twitter said yes. They said, well, we'll take it down. They went along with it, but Australia wanted to go even further. Australia said, okay, Twitter, you've taken it down for everybody living in Australia. No, that's not good enough. We want you to block it worldwide. So this is, you could be living in the United States of America and the Australian government wants to be able to control what you can and cannot see online. Elon Musk kind of came out and said, well, that's absolutely absurd. Why should Australia be dictating to the world what can and cannot be posted on Twitter? Everyone else went along with it. And that is what's led to just this unhinged attack on Elon Musk, where Jackie Lambie, she said that he should be in jail and the key thrown away. It's tremendously revealing how angry they are about this, how quickly it just becomes, we want to lock you up, we want to throw away the key. They don't like people standing up for themselves, thinking for themselves, doing anything they don't want. And this comes just a month after Australia passed a new digital ID law, it's voluntary for now, but Australians, they can get a government ID for going online and you can use it. It's voluntary for now, so you can use it for other companies. They're going to encourage businesses and things to accept the same digital ID. And the fear is in Australia that it will become some kind of social credit score and another part of the government's control over what people can and cannot say online. You know, it was rammed through the Australian Senate last month. Opposition senators complained they had no time to debate, no time to ask questions. It was just pushed on through there. You know, maybe it remains voluntary. I could see this happening where it remains voluntary for now. But if you went any kind of sort of convenient interaction with the government online, you must have one. And if you don't, well, then you've got to fill in all these paperwork in triplicate and go and spend your afternoon in line at the DMV or whatever it is. So they can kind of be like, well, we're not forcing you, when really they're making your life incredibly inconvenient if you don't have it. But then, and then once they've got it in place, well, then they can use that to track what websites you visit, certainly what services you sign up for, potentially what you buy. You then attach a government ID to social media and you make posts the government doesn't like and they could be booted off social media. I mean, when you look at the way that they're trying to, they're saying, well, that's not on the table at all right now. That's not in the law that we've proposed. And sure, it's not. But can you kind of give them the benefit of the doubt and just hope that the Australian government is acting in good faith when they're saying, we want to regulate the entire internet anywhere in the world, and if somebody doesn't like that, they need to be thrown in jail and the key thrown away. Like, what is the spirit behind that? That is one of the things that's really striking for me. Like, we focused on Europe's attempts to regulate the internet all around the world. But that spirit is not just in Europe. It seems like everybody wants to police everybody online. There's a real spirit of authoritarianism. There's another story I wanted to touch on quickly, pushing laws across borders that I don't think has gotten enough attention. And that comes from the European Court of Human Rights, where they've been trying to force governments to clamp down on climate change. And again, this is something where your government very soon could be forced to impose higher taxes, to stop you from heating your home or make it very expensive for you to heat your home, limit how much you can drive, can rob you of your freedom just to move around, and there may be nothing you can do about it at the ballot box. Like, they're trying to impose it on a level that voters cannot object. So a new ruling from the European Court of Human Rights is going to do something like this in Europe, forcing tougher environmental laws no matter what voters say. This came from Switzerland, where you had a group of older women brought a case against the Swiss government. And it's bizarrely ridiculous. It is incredible that this got any traction whatsoever, where these women argued that the Swiss, basically they said that older women are disproportionately affected by heat waves. Climate change will cause heat waves. Therefore, according to their human rights, the European government has to do something, or the Swiss government has to do something about this. I'm just seeing the rumble stream seems a little stuttery. I don't know if there's anything anyone can look at on that. I've got mine going here in the corner, but it doesn't seem happy. If anyone can see if they might be able to figure out what's going on there. But so this was 2,000 women in their 70s. They took the Swiss government to court. They were claiming that there was insufficient climate change regulation, violating their basic human rights. And it's all nonsense. I mean, the court is stepping in and ruling in a whole load of areas that it has no competence really to be ruling. And they won. The Swiss government, now the Swiss government has had referendum. Well, they put these to the people. These are the climate change measures that we want. There was one referendum the people rejected. There was another one that they accepted. But it was a democracy and the people were making the laws that they wanted. In one case, they were like, okay, this is a bit too extreme. We don't want to do that. This is a bit more of a moderate anti-climate change measure. We want to do that. But now the court has said, well, this is what you're going to do. There's no debate about science, none of this. We are in charge. We're going to take control of this, and there's no choice. And they want to do more. This is what Greta Thunberg was saying after the court ruled on this. This is clip one, Here we go.
Today's rulings make very clear that the European states have a legal responsibility to take real climate action and to protect people and to protect its citizens. It cannot be a political choice whether to respect human rights or not. And this is only the beginning of climate litigation. All over the world, more and more people are taking their government to court, holding them responsible for their actions. The results of this can mean in no way that we lean back. This means that we have to fight even more, since this is only the beginning, because in a climate emergency, everything is at stake. We are going to use every tool in the toolbox that we have. The climate justice movement has been using different methods for decades now, repeating the same message over and over again. And as we can see, the emissions are still on the rise. We are still moving in the wrong direction. So we will continue to do everything we can to use different methods that we can. Because we are not going to give up.
So I'm pushing our tech team in all these different directions, saying, look at the lagging, and then, all right, now we're going to play this clip now. But the point is with this court is you're getting more and more different rulings, whether it's climate change policy, whether it's, you know, we want this video taken down, countries just trying to impose these things at an international level in a way that voters cannot object to. And there was Greta Thunberg talking about how they want to that now apply this model more and more. So, and you're seeing this. Norway is being taken to court for issuing new oil and gas laws. And this ruling from the European Court could be well used in that case to say, well, no new drilling for Norway. You have a man with multiple cirrhosis whose health suffers when it's hot taking Austria to court now, using this same precedent. Different courts across Europe are all going to have to follow this. And then even the International Court of Justice, they set precedents around the world. They're going to be affected by this. And it's a really strong spirit of authoritarianism. Do what we say, you know, put in the taxes that we say, or take down the video if we say take it down. And this is what we talk about a fair bit on this show is will worship. Just human beings exalting their will above everything. I will it to be this way, therefore it must be this way. And if it's not this way, well, then that individual, if he gets in the way, then he should be thrown in jail and have the key thrown away. And it's a really different spirit to the way that God works, where he doesn't force his way on people. He doesn't say, well, just accept my word and do it. You know, we're always saying, well, prove it. Prove it for yourself. Prove that the Bible is true. We have a book on that on our website, thetrumpet.com. Prove what I'm saying right now. If I say, well, the Bible says this, don't take my word for it. Don't worship my will. Don't do it because, well, he says it says this in the Bible. Get it out for yourself. Get the booklets that we mentioned. That's why we push the booklets so much and talk about them, because, you know, okay, in an hour show, I can reference all these different trends and things like that. But really, are you going to be able to prove that just based on this short show? Probably not. But if you can get a book and study it for yourself, you can really prove it. And this is what Mr. Flurry wrote the other month in his, he had a short article, The Regime Fears an Educated Citizenry. He said, people engage in will worship when they place their own will or the will of another being above reality, which is to say above the God of reality. They're not interested in primary sources like the Bible. Take Paul's advice, let no man beguile you with censorship or AI deception. Now is the time to delve into primary sources and hold fast to the truth. That's something we are going to get to in a little bit, tying it up to that AI and potential to deceive. But people put their own will above reality. If we say climate change is happening, if we say that you have to do this to deal with climate change, well, doesn't matter what the voters say, that's what it's going to be. All right, well, I also wanted to talk about this Supreme Court case yesterday, where the Supreme Court is examining the limits of presidential immunity, where Joe Biden's Department of Justice is arguing that Donald Trump should be jailed, basically, for disputing the 2020 election results. And I think when you abstract it, it can be a bit of a thorny question. You had Justice Brett Kavanaugh pointing out in some of these cross-examinations, you know, prosecuting an ex-president, it sets a dangerous precedent. If somebody can be chased through the courts as soon as they leave office, well, then you're going to have the incentive be there for them to cling to power in any way they can. That's exactly what destroyed the Roman Republic, that Julius Caesar or, you know, anybody in high office knew as soon as they let go of office, they would be chased through the courts. The result is he marched an army on Rome rather than let go of office. So the idea of just going after presidents after they're in office is very dangerous. But at the same time, to grant a clear blanket immunity to prosecution, well, then you could have a president that goes around and has his political rivals assassinated. And maybe this is why America's founding fathers were never really able to figure out exactly what to do on presidential immunity. They kind of went back and forth a bit on that. But when you take it out of the abstract and look at the matter at hand and the case at hand, it's much clearer. Biden's DOJ, they were arguing yesterday that Barack Obama is immune for prosecution for ordering drone strikes against U.S. citizens, but Donald Trump is not for exploring legal routes to dispute the election results. We've got a clip of that from the court case that we can play for you now.
How about President Obama's drone strikes?
So the Office of Legal Counsel looked at this very carefully and determined that, number one, the federal murder statute does apply to the executive branch. The president wasn't personally carrying out the strike, but the aiding and abetting laws are broad. And it determined that a public authority exception that's built into statutes and that applied particularly to the murder statute because it talks about unlawful killing did not apply to the drone strike. So this is actually the way that the system should function. The Department of Justice takes criminal law very seriously. It runs it through the analysis very carefully with established principles. It documents them, it explains them, and then the president can go forward in accordance with it. And there is no risk of prosecution for that course of activity.
So there was, there they were discussing the drone strike. Basically, Biden's guys were arguing that it was legal for Barack Obama to do these drone strikes because the Attorney General signed off on it, which then people are asking questions about, well, doesn't the president appoint the Attorney General? Why would that make the difference? But really, I think when you look at it that starkly, it's clear that it's another case just to go out there and try and get Donald Trump. And no president has been charged with criminal conduct after their time in office. And the fact that it's happening now is a dangerous sign that the law is being weaponized and too many care about their side and going after their side than they do about the law, rule of law. And that's a very dangerous place to be. All right, I just noticed somebody on chat mentions that the stream is not lagging on the Trumpet stream. So maybe it's that Rumble just doesn't like talking to England right now. So if you are struggling, you could go over to our website, thetrumpet.com, and I think we do have a stream and an alternate stream over there. All right, well, I wanted to talk about as well, I'm keeping on zipping through this because I wanted to leave, I was blown away by this AI story that I want to get to in a little bit, so I want to leave some time for that. A couple of stories from Europe. We had French President Emmanuel Macron gave another impassioned speech yesterday for the EU to break away from the United States and to be a major power in its own right. We must build a Europe capable of showing it is never the vassal of the United States of America and that it also knows how to speak to all regions of the world. He also said that the era of basing our production in China, of delegating our defenses to the US and getting our energy from Russia is over. The rules of the game have changed. So once again, another story here where it's France trying to lead the whole EU away from the United States and saying we want to be fundamentally different from the United States. We want to break with the United States. And that's something that doesn't get really enough airing outside of Europe, where I think everyone looks at, certainly in the United States, look at Europe as this kind of secure ally, while you've got the French president organizing a really big speech. This is one of the biggest speeches of the year for him, where he's saying basically, you know, we're not the vassal of the United States. If we do what America, if we behave like an American ally, well, that's being a vassal. We need to be very different. And he talked about some practical steps to make Europe separate and to develop their own defense industry. And this is something that Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Flurry wrote about recently in the cover article of our latest Trumpet print magazine, France's Deadly Ignorance About Germany. And he drew attention to the way that this has been something France has been pushing for many, many years. He wrote, Macron and others seek to build a genuine United States of Europe that is nothing less than a revival of the Holy Roman Empire. So this really is what we saw in push yesterday. There's another story from Europe yesterday that revolves around this as well, where we're seeing Germany push to become a new normal country again, where they are going to start celebrating a Veterans Day. That's something that quite obviously, or understandably, they've not really had, at least in West Germany, since World War II. So they're going to set aside June 15th as an annual Veterans Day. Deutsche Welle explains that, Germans historically haven't had much interest in what their soldiers are doing abroad, but they say that this new day aims to change that. Get Germans more excited about what their army is doing. And that should be something that that should catch attention. And this was something, it was put forward several decades ago, just over a decade ago, it was 12 years ago. Nobody was interested. But now it was passed through with just about all the major political parties within Germany were supporting it. And so then the Christian Democratic Union, last year, they announced plans for a federal program of patriotism. They want more flag waving. They wanted a different national day. They want more German symbols and things in German history to promote patriotic self-assurance among members of the Bundestag. And this is another important trend. And this is, we were talking about this in this story in Trumpet Hour a little bit. And one thing that Trumpet Hour hopes Philip Nice has kind of pointed out, and since he pointed this out, I've been noticing it more and more, is just even in social media, even in American social media, there's been this glorification of the Holy Roman Empire. Like, I was just on Twitter the other day, and it might have been this morning, might have been yesterday, there was this long kind of thread of memes about how great it was to go on the Crusades. No, like, it's not great to go on. The Crusades were horrible. The Crusaders were not good guys. Like, it does not take much history to know that. That's not to say that the people that they were fighting were good guys either, the Muslims, but, you know, the Crusaders were coming into Jerusalem and they were massacring Muslims, they were massacring Jews. It was a brutal time. Like, those that then, okay, they're different from the left. That does not make them role models, but that was kind of, I was a bit blown away that was all over Twitter. But there's a lot of this kind of glorifying that history. And that's what this Veterans Day is doing in Germany as well. Of course, they're not going to be specifically celebrating the veterans from World War II, at least not initially. But it is all part of kind of changing, rewriting German history so that is a small, unfortunate episode. But we revive a lot of the rest of it. And Mr. Flurry focused on this in 2018. He had a cover article there on the Holy Roman Empire. I'm trying to remember. I didn't write down the title, but I think it was The Holy Roman Empire is Back, or the Resurrecting the Holy Roman Empire History. And in there he said, the Europeans are doing something they've never done since the vile and murderous Sixth Head. They're publicizing the Holy Roman Empire. They don't publicize what Adolf Hitler did. Too many people remember that bloody history. Instead, they cloak it in the tradition of Charlemagne, and it's the same story. Not as many people died then in the First Reich because they didn't have the same military technology, but it's the same ambition. Germany has repeatedly re-emerged as a devastating military power. We're seeing the beast rise again today. Look at Europe. Germany is once again at the helm. A rearmed and militant Germany will prove to be one of the United States' biggest nightmares. And that's what this is all about. I don't think many are going to be concerned by the revival of German patriotism that we're seeing. The Holy Roman Empire goes public big time. That's the title. They put that up on the screen for us. But we're seeing this empire rise up again. And that's something that Herbert W. Armstrong warned about for years, something Mr. Flurry's warned about for years. This is a critical aspect of Bible prophecy. America is being brought down from within, and this is being raised up. And this is what's going to really hurt the United States from without. And we have our free book, The Holy Roman Empire in Prophecy, you can get if you want to read more about that. All right, I think I'll skip over this story. There was another story I was going to get into about rising support for this almost neo-Nazi party within Germany from young people. I think I might save that for another day. We can take a short break. When we come back, I want to look at this slightly mind-blowing AI story. See you in a minute.
Herbert W. Armstrong long forecast the arrival of a military superpower in Europe. In a world where European nations can't rely on the United States. Hoorah! One in which they fear Russia and face the constant threat of radical terror. Their only hope of survival is to band together. This is what we see happening. And what we see happening was prophesied in your Bible. request Germany and the Holy Roman Empire to learn about the history of Germany and the Holy Roman Empire and to understand where the events in Europe today are leading. 3,000 years ago, the prophet Daniel explained that at the time of the end, radical Islam would push against Europe. That time is now. We are witnessing the first manifestations of this Islamist push against Europe, and it's leading to a spectacular clash between these two prophesied kings, the King of the North and the King of the South. What does the Bible say about the identity of these two kings? What about the end time? Will everyone be affected by these events? Request our two booklets, The King of the South and Germany and the Holy Roman Empire. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com.
Daily Show. I want to do something a little bit unusual. I'm going to play some country music. Don't worry, this is not going to become a regular thing. At least, I hope not. But I want you to have a listen. Listen carefully. See if you notice anything about this song. If you're on Rumble, feel free to put your observations in the chat. But have a bit of a listen. Maybe you can keep my mic up, George, and I might kind of comment as we play. But here we go.
Oh, on Monday, does the liquor store usually open at? Oh, so I can't drive my Dodge Ram after a fifth of wine. Why? Telling me now for the first time.
So, fairly generic country song. But what if I were to tell you that song was 100% fake? Nothing in that is authentic. There were no guitars used in making that song. There were no drums. There were no human beings used in the creation of that song. It is completely and totally the creation of artificial intelligence. This has been something that's kind of exploded over the last month or so, is these various different AI tools. AI music tools. This particular one is from something called Udio. I'm definitely not recommending that. You go to these, there's all kinds of, you know, people can just make songs where whatever. So, of course, there's all kinds of swear words and obscene language and all of that kind of thing. But the lyrics, it's all written by AI. You give it some instructions, it makes up the whole thing. Now, if I listen closely to it, I can tell the voice sounds a little unnatural. It kind of sounds, there's some of the same kind of like auto-tuner almost. Type of sound in there. But yeah, I gave it a go. And I was curious how easy this is, how quick this is. I told it to write me a symphonic orchestral piece about a new show called The Trumpet Daily. You know, I typed in my prompt, it thought about it for about 30 seconds. Here's what it came up with. So there you go. That's what a computer came up with in about 30 seconds. Yeah, there's something pretty mind-blowing about that. AI, very advanced. And I think, you know, audio requires fundamentally less data than video. So this is something that it is really kind of progressed on. So it's easy to listen to that and to have, you know, your mind be a little bit blown by it. But also there are some very dark sides to this. So I now want you to take a listen to this. This is, this is a piece of audio that went viral on Twitter for a bit, or spread quite widely.
You know, I seriously don't understand why I have to constantly put up with these here every day. Between these ungrateful black kids who can't test their way out of a paper bag, or these teachers who don't get it, how hard is it to get these students to meet their grade level expectations? Lawrence and Ravenel should have never been hired. And don't let me get started on DJ. I'm going to drag his black ass out of here one way or another. I'm going to get something to stick. I'm just so sick of the inadequacies of these people. And if I have to get one more complaint from one more Jew in this community, I'm going to join the other side.
Sorry about that. I thought we cut out the bleep bits. I should have checked that more carefully. I don't like playing bleeps when we can help it. But here's the story on there. A school principal was recorded making these fairly racist remarks about people being upset with black students for failing tests. This spread around on social media. The school principal was suspended. He was temporarily removed from the school. His social media page was inundated with all kinds of aggressive messages. You know, it all looked like he was just about to lose his job. Turns out that clip is as fake as the music I played for you earlier. He never said any of that. And it was all put together by a disgruntled PE teacher. I think his was the other face you saw up on there, Dazon Darian. There was this whole kind of backstory where the principal had accused this PE teacher of stealing a couple of $1,000s of school funds by paying his roommate to be a basketball coach, but then his roommate never showed up or did any work or anything like that. And so the principal began an investigation. He wanted to get back at the principal. So he created this recording using AI tools. He sent it around the school. He kind of knew who was the gossip monger. There's one particular teacher he sent it to, and she sent it then to like a student that she knew would send it around everywhere. And people believe it. I mean, I tend to think I was pretty savvy at picking up a lot of these fake kind of things, but nothing set my radar off really on that. I think I would have believed that if I'd have seen that. I mean, it really opened my eyes to some of the wider dangers of AI and how it can kind of really lead to this world where what is real and what is fake is just blurred. I mean, you've got this now where people can make up fake audio. The other thing is, in the future, anyone who has any embarrassing audio then leak out about them, well, they've got a ready-made defense. They can say, well, it was an AI fake. I never said that. So I think it used to be easier to dismiss, say, some of the dangers that people would talk about AI. And part of me is still kind of peeved that we've changed the meaning of AI and that we talk about as artificial intelligence is not what 5 years ago or even 2 or 3 years ago was called artificial intelligence. We haven't invented artificial intelligence still. We just changed the definition so that what we have invented, we now call it. Anyway, that's kind of by the by, though, it does lead people to overestimate the kind of the intelligence of some of these tools. But you know, it shows that there's real danger here. I remember the Photoshop days where people came out with Photoshop and people were talking about, well, no one's going to be able to tell the difference between what's real and what's fake. But we kind of got through that. That was at least kind of what I thought. People learned how to spot Photoshop images and people got good at pointing at the different artifacts and being like, oh yeah, well that's Photoshopped. And we learned to come to pictures with a certain degree of skepticism. We all kind of learned, okay, Photoshop exists. So I was kind of like, well, maybe we'll just get through AI the same way that we got through Photoshop. And I'm sure there will be a bit of that, but I think that underestimates a lot. I think it underestimates some of the more pernicious effects of Photoshop, where every picture you see now has been digitally altered in some way. That does affect your view on what is real and what is normal. But also, you know, this does take realism up a big level. I mean, I think about, well, what if as AI kind of gets more and more sophisticated, are you going to get to the point where only experts really can tell if something is truly AI or not? And well, we've seen some of these experts lie. I mean, think about Hunter Biden's laptop. where the experts came out and said, well, this is Russian disinformation. And we've seen all kinds of things, we in the intel community, to show that the Russians are planning this. So, yeah, we as the experts can tell you this is fake. And they lied. So now in this era of AI, are you going to get this kind of thing where you maybe you get some unflattering portrait or some unflattering footage or soundbite from Barack Obama, and CNN comes out and says, we fact-checked this, we got our AI experts to look at it, and it's fake? Could they just straight up lie? Or you have a fake thing made up about Donald Trump, and they come out and say, oh, our experts looked at it, and it's real. And you're kind of at this world where you're at the mercy of some of these experts. And yeah, it really does start to make it very easy to attack the truth. This is something that Mr. Flurry talked about recently as well. He had this article, The Unknown Future of Artificial Intelligence. He said, manipulating artificial intelligence is a powerful way to manipulate the minds of the masses. I mean, look at that. What we just saw, that was a school principal, and it was a relatively small internal dispute among the staff at a school. I mean, what if that was a nationally known politician? And I think it was like January that all of this, like it was several months ago that all of this happened. I mean, what if it's 2 days before an election or before some significant referendum? And in the long run, a week later, 2 weeks later, we all find out that it's fake, but that takes some time. You can really see the power of this to manipulate the masses. Mr. Flurry writes, whoever understands this technology has a significant advantage in the world. It seems certain that some will exploit the dark side of AI. I believe we know who these individuals are. And he went on to point about, look at the way that Barack Obama has pushed a lot of AI regulation to, you know, ensure he's the only one, you know, he wants to be the one that tells you, well, this is real and this is fake. He connects AI with misinformation and disinformation, because he wants to be the one that comes out and says, well, this is real and this is fake. So I think that's just, like I said, I think I've maybe been a little, I mean, not dismissive, but maybe not grasping how disruptive this can be. And I think those stories, seeing some of that AI music and that fake interview that does sound like a kind of fly on the wall kind of recording or a telephone recording, how dangerous it can be. And one of the things that is brought out in that article that's fascinating is how many Bible verses talk about this time where there's a war on truth. And it really brings a lot of these scriptures to life to see that war on truth. Jeremiah 7:28, truth is perished and is cut off from their mouth. Jeremiah 9 and verse 5 talks about where every man will deceive his neighbors and will not speak the truth. They've taught their tongue to speak lies. The next verse talks about, well, it's in the midst of deceit. Isaiah 59, none calls for justice, nor any pleads for truth. They trust in vanity and speak lies. They conceive mischief and bring forth iniquity. And that's the generation that we live in, and we see that already. And now you've just got this incredibly powerful tool for lying and deceiving. This is from the RSV, from Isaiah 59, verses 14 to 15. It says, justice is turned back and righteousness stands afar off. Actually, this is from... what I believe our producer's got up on the screen right now, the Navigating Our Fake World trumpet print, not from Mr. Flurry's one. This is from a slightly different article. But it goes through and quotes all of these different scriptures. Justice is turned back and righteousness stands afar off, for truth has fallen in the public square and uprightness cannot enter. Truth is lacking and he who departs from evil makes himself a prey. Truth is lacking. So much potential for fakery. There was another article in there about how a computer created our cover image. I mean, that kind of feels old news now. Remember these AI images? And now it's kind of like, oh, yeah, like people have six fingers. We can tell they're fake. They were pretty astonishing when they first opened up there. But this article that we had on that, it says, what makes this especially troubling is that today our dizzying technological advancements are tracking in the opposite direction to our character. These tools are breaking restraints on our imaginations at a time when society is also violently tossed off moral restraints and cast aside our God-given compass of right and wrong. With the devil at our elbow, we pursue whatever we whim. We follow our deceitful hearts, whether they lead us. Humanity without the guardrails of godly absolutes is entrusting technology in general, and now artificial intelligence in particular, with more and more responsibility, not just to create our art and communicate to us, but to diagnose our illnesses, decode our genes, drive our cars, fly our aircraft, design our machines, guide our weapons, and more. Lacking secure spiritual mooring, this technology is already slipping from our control. The ultimate consequences we can scarcely imagine. I mean, look at what we've already done, the addictions we've already created, enhanced with the technology that we have already with smartphones, and you have now a sophisticated, I don't have one in my pocket, but many people do, a sophisticated gaming device, TV device, music device, social media device in their pockets, and it's enable, you know, it's just everything in there has been geared to grab as much attention and eyeballs as possible. And then now you see the potential of doing this to for AI, you know, where you've got, I mean, how many people do you see immersed in music walking around? We've kind of normalized now going to the shops wearing headphones and walking around with headphones everywhere. Well, now you could have an AI write personalized music for you, an unlimited amount of music that you've never heard before, an infinite brand new songs that can capture exactly what appeals to you about music. I mean, the fact that it is that one I played for you, I just picked the most played song on that particular website. I think the fact that it can encapsulate a genre like country so easily shows how formulaic our music has become. If I was an optimist, I'd kind of say, well, hopefully this will force humans to be more creative rather than just keep churning out music according to the same formula, because now an AI can do that, and you just keep using the same four or five chord sequences and whatever, and there isn't much creativity that goes into so much of modern music. So maybe this will force humans to get better. Knowing human nature, I don't think so. But anyway, you can have all of this AI creating personalized music for you. Is that going to make music more addictive? I mean, where is this technology going to be in another year or two? How long before, I mean, this would require a lot more data, but something that can craft the most addictive TV series, maybe even personalized to you or to a small group of people, or they bring AI into games to make them more replayable, more addictive. You can have now all the characters that you're interacting with in a video game are AI, so that these games become a more realistic alternative reality, more immersive, I guess the term is. Is this just going to bring and turn up the dial on addictions and distractions? So I just thought, seeing those this week, it did give a good glimpse of the perilous times that we live in. A real danger there to keep watching. But I did want to finish with a positive science and tech story, one that I think is... God did create a real genius in mankind. And it is one that is kind of guided and governed by misled by the God of this world into all kinds of evil, you know, influenced by Satan, the devil. But there is a brilliance there that God created. And this is a story that illustrates that, where NASA has managed to repair a space probe 15 billion miles away. This is a pretty insane, mind-boggling story, where NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory has fixed the Voyager. They fixed the Voyager space probe. So, around December, well, it was started in November, Voyager's messages to Earth became gibberish. And this is the furthest probe that man has ever sent out. It is a real achievement. It's been going since the 1970s, and it was meant to just be a 5-year mission, but it's kept on going. But then the messages came out gibberish and garbled, and scientists discovered that a computer chip had degraded after being in space for 46 years, so much longer than originally planned. And I've been seeing different publications writing Voyager's obituary over the last few months, and I was kind of getting ready to do the same. I was like, well, I don't want to write it off yet. I'll wait. I'll hold off. And yeah, they did pull it around. They did manage to fix it. So the chip that was broken held a lot of the code for the what's called the flight data substream, but a lot of code for managing how this worked. And so what they had, but so they had to put this code somewhere else because it was all on this chip that was corroded. There were no other chips big enough to put that code on. So then they had to put it in these small chunks and put it on different chips that were still remaining and do this with a 22-hour lag. Like they send an instruction and it takes 22 hours to reach the probe, another 22 hours to come back. It's that far away. But they announced on Monday they've received their first status report from Voyager. They've managed to fix the system enough to start getting some actual usable data, and they plan on having it back and up and running within a few weeks. And there's a lot of, I think there's just a lot of hope that comes from looking at that. Like I say, you see God, man's godly type mind, but also the Voyager, it gives you this wonderful vision of just the vastness of space. I feel like about 10 years ago, I went through this phase where every 2 or 3 years, I was writing the same news story. Voyager leaves the solar system. And you start doing this 2 or 3 times. Like, why am I writing the same news story? Didn't they leave the solar system 2 years ago? How can they keep leaving the solar system? And I looked into it, and there are just a lot of different places where you can draw a line on a map and say, this is the edge of the solar system. And kind of every few years, it would cross another of these lines, and you'd have all of these news stories. Voyager leaves the solar system. So that got me curious. Like, how long until I can write that story and know I'm not going to have to write it again? Like, when is the final line that you can say, okay, for sure now, Voyager has left the solar system? It's a long time. So the best boundary that I could come up with was the Oort cloud. The Oort cloud is this big cloud, this field of rocks and debris and comets that orbits the sun. And that seemed like a good boundary to me for when Voyager leaves the solar system. So it's kind of like, okay, well, how long am I going to have to wait before Voyager gets through the Oort cloud? And I can write, well, this is it for real this time. Voyager leaves the solar system. 30,000 years. For the next 30,000 years, it is still just in the solar system. It is traveling. It is 15 billion miles away. I have the speed on here somewhere, but mind-bogglingly fast. 38,000 miles an hour. It travels 1 billion miles every 3 years, and you're still going to have to wait 30,000 years before it leaves the solar system properly. If you wanted to leave wait until it had left the final kind of line on the map, the most distant line on the map that could count as leaving the solar system, to be sure that you'd really written this article for the last time, you'd have to wait another 10,000 years. It brings home the mind-bogglingly huge size of the universe, of space, of what's out there. What about, okay, we're getting to another star. Well, it's not really pointed in the right direction for traveling to the nearest star. That's not what it was designed to do. But if it was, if it had been pointing to our nearest star, it was sometime around the year 77,013. Long, long time that you'd have to wait before it reaches the nearest star. And this is one of the fastest moving man-made objects ever. It was during researching this that I discovered that possibly the fastest man-made object ever was the time that the US government accidentally shot a manhole cover into the air while doing a nuclear test, and it disappeared and possibly vaporized. I love the fact that quite possibly the thing that holds the title for the fastest ever man-made object might have been something by mistake. But Voyager is traveling mind-bogglingly fast. And we've got a few minutes. We can look at John chapter 14. I think that this is looking at the universe. There's a good reason to do that at this time of year. There's a good reason to do it just about all the time, but it does tie into some of the lessons of this time of year. We've just come through, as you've been hearing about on this show, we've come through the Passover on God's holy day calendar, the days of unleavened bread. And John chapter 14 gives what Jesus Christ is talking about after he has taught his disciples about the bread and the wine and had his final Passover ceremony and before he's killed. And one of the things that he just spends a few verses talking about is a kind of universe vision. We see that in John chapter 14, where he says, "Let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. I mean, this is a verse that you hear a lot in the Christianity of this world, and it's often, they don't really grasp the vision that is here. You know, when it says, in my Father's house are many mansions, if it were not so, I would not go. This is not about Jesus Christ preparing space in heaven for Christians to go in the afterlife. No, you can turn to Matthew chapter 5 and you can see how, well, it says, blessed are the meek, blessed are the merciful, because they're going to rule on earth. They shall rule the earth. That's where God's saints will be after they're resurrected, not up in heaven. Instead, this Father's house is coming down to the earth. This Father's house is referring to New Jerusalem. And it's being actively prepared to come down to the earth, to be the headquarters of the universe. This is from Mr. Flurry's booklet, John's Gospel, The Love of God. It says, the Father's house is being built in heaven. It will be brought to earth with New Jerusalem after there's no more flesh here. This will be a time when there are only spirit beings. He said that New Jerusalem will be filled with real offices. We live and work in that beautiful, fabulous, magnificent house forever with our Father and our husband. Christ said he would go and prepare a place for you. That's verse 3. If I go, I prepare a place for you, and I come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, you may be also. Mr. Ploy writes, you need to take this personally. God will ensure we each have a place, an appropriate office. God's house is being built around the personnel Jesus Christ has. The place each of us occupies will depend on what we do. We will be rewarded according to our works and what we have done to help God's work. It is really that practical. So there is an incredible vision here of New Jerusalem being prepared for what? For renewing the universe, to be a headquarters for mankind going out into the universe. And, well, man can't do it on his own. Voyager shows us that. It's got tens of thousands of years before it begins to get anywhere. Instead, this is about man being brought into the God family so that God can then have all of this supply of God beings to go out and renew the universe. And he's preparing government personnel to do that right now. And what do we need to do to prepare for that? Well, we need to de-leaven our lives. We need to overcome sin. We need to get cleaned up. Mr. Flurry writes, this is the kind of office God is preparing for us now as we work. He's been preparing offices for all the first fruits throughout all the ages. Your office will match your overcoming and conquering, and God hold you accountable for what talents you have. That's a very fair deal. So this is the big vision behind de-leavening and cleaning up our lives, overcoming sin, because then God wants to use that in bringing more people into the family and ultimately going out into a universe that requires God beings and not puny human beings to colonize and to beautify. Well, that is about all we have time for. Thank you for persevering through whatever technical difficulties we had with Rumble. It looks like, from what I can tell, it was just with Rumble. So if you're still listening, well, it's too late now. If there are problems with the video uploading and you're getting to the end, you can probably find a clean copy on our website, thetrumpet.com. Thank you so much for joining us. If you have any questions or comments, you can email us, td@thetrumpet.com. If you want to give us a call about anything, you can call us up on 1-866-930-3024 if you're in North America. And we'll have another guest host. We'll be very excited to be with you back on Monday.